Hello and a very warm welcome to episode 5 of the Cardiff podcast. My name is Alistair Love. This week's guest is none other than the Lord Mayor of Cardiff, Bob Derbyshire. Ahead of a visit to the Mansion House by the Lithuanian ambassador, no less, Bob took time out to tell me about the role and how, in the eyes of many, the Lord Mayor is still an important position in the city. He outlines the part the Mayor plays in enhancing Cardiff's reputation to the rest of the world and reflects on the great leap from the trenches of frontline local politics to the neutrality demanded by the mayoral role. We also reflect on how the city has transformed, of course, and what that has meant for the people he has represented in his Rumney ward since 1999. We also talk about modern day politics in a very neutral way, of course. We pack a lot in half an hour, so grab a cuppa, sit back and enjoy a chat with the Lord Mayor. It sounds very much like this. Right, so I'm delighted to say I'm here today with the Lord Mayor of Cardiff, Bob Derbyshire, which is a huge honour. I must declare an interest. Bob is a friend of mine and I've worked closely with him over the years in Cardiff Council. But I'm happy to say he's invited me into the Mansion House in Cardiff and I've had a bit of a look around. I've even seen where Nelson Mandela stayed, so that was very exciting. But thank you. What do I call you?
The Right Honourable the Lord Mayor of the County and City of Cardiff.
Good grief. I think that's too much of a mouthful for me at my age.
Bob will do.
Can I go for Bob? Right, thanks, Bob. Sorry, I could never remember all that. That's far too much. But thank you so much for taking part in the Cardiff podcast. It's really, really good of you. I guess the first thing I need to ask you, really, is how's it been? I mean, we're coming up to... you finish in May, is that right?
End of May.
So how's it been as Lord Mayor of our great capital?
It's been a fascinating experience for me over the last 10 months, and one I've enjoyed, I must admit. It's the variety of doing the role that is particularly pleasing to me.
What's been the highlight then?
I don't think there's been one specific highlight. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed, on a personal level, I enjoyed going to the Champions League final. That was an experience
I remember for
the rest of my life, being an avid football supporter. Yeah. But I think what's always given me pleasure is meeting and greeting the people of Cardiff, and in particular, people in Cardiff who do things for other people. The unsung heroes, as we like to call them, who often do things without any thought of getting any recognition. So actually to go there and thank them for what they've done and see them win awards has been probably the thing for me that I've enjoyed the most.
I'm really interested in the angle that, you know, you've been in the trenches, if you like, of Cardiff politics for many, many years. How has it been adapting to... Because obviously you have to be neutral, which we understand. But how have you adapted to that?
With difficulty, I think, is the short answer. Once a politician, always a politician, I suppose.
Yeah.
And obviously I still have my thoughts and views on all aspects
sure
and
do.
Things that
yeah.
come up. But what I have to be very careful of, partly when you meet the public, although it doesn't come up an awful lot, because obviously members of the public just want to see the Lord Mayor and they don't really care what your political views are, so it's not too big an issue there. But obviously you have to make sure that members of other parties, especially when you're chairing the council meeting, which is one of the other roles that the Lord Mayor has to do,
that
you're seen to be impartial.
Yeah.
So I just have to make sure that, and in fairness, my staff... I call them my staff.
Yeah.
We're not talking about a great entourage here, but when I go to an event, it's made very clear in advance that as the Lord Mayor, I shouldn't be asked anything political. So it makes it easy for me, really.
And now, I was going to bring it up myself, but you brought it up about chairing council meetings. I used to have to go to council meetings. And it's a pretty rumbustious affair, I think we can safely say. A lot of sort of knockabout politics going on. What's it like chairing that, especially because you were on the front bench up until that moment you became Lord Mayor? So that's quite a leap, isn't it?
It is, and yes, I was part of that knockabout,
yeah,
if you like.
Indeed,
and
you were. I saw you
one,
in action.
One of the reasons... One of the reasons I took on the role...
Sorry, listener, the microphone fell over. It's a very slick operation, this.
One of the reasons I took on the role of Lord Mayor, and others were particularly keen to see me do it, is because I've got a lot of experience of chairing meetings.
Yeah.
And it was felt that things had got a bit out of hand
right.
Over the past few years, and that it was a steady hand was perhaps needed. And I think, I like to think I provided that. Certainly the feedback I've had has been very positive from people. But yes, I mean, I chaired a meeting, as you know, I was the cabinet member for environment. So often when you hear somebody asking a question of the environment cabinet member, and you've been involved in that previously, you know, there's a big temptation to say, hang on a minute, I can tell you what the answer to that is.
You have to sit on your hands.
But I have to avoid doing that very carefully. So yes, it's an interesting challenge.
And what's been your style when you've chaired the full council meetings?
The old expression about firm but fair, I suppose. I like to think that what I've brought to the council is the ability for people to understand what the situation is. So I've been very clear about, for instance, when we have half an hour for a subject, I've made it clear at the beginning of that I'll take the first X number of speakers and that'll be it. Mm-hmm. So people are very conscious of the fact that if they fail to become in that first 7 or 8 or whatever it is, the number I've given, that they won't get a chance to speak. So they've got no complaints because I've made it clear at the beginning that that's the situation. And also I think an element of humour is important. Yeah. So I try not to crack jokes, but I try to bring a bit of lightheartedness into the situation from time to time, just to make sure that people don't get too heavy and it doesn't get too out of hand.
How was that received then, sort of bringing humour into it? How was that received?
I think it's worked quite well. Yeah. I try not to do it at somebody's expense.
Yeah.
It's more to do with just lightening the situation.
So I can imagine tempers getting out of hand and you sort of prick that balloon in a sense. Do you bring a bit of levity to it? Yeah. And God, it sounds hard work though, because I can remember 5 or 6 hours sometimes. It's a long old haul, isn't it?
I've managed to finish, I think, every council meeting by 9 o'clock, around about 9 o'clock.
Yes.
So that's brought it down from what it was to, 9 o'clock means it's been 4.5 hours, but within that there's been a break as well. So
yeah. And so coming back to your role as Lord Mayor then, what's been the difference? I mean, has it been almost enlightening meeting you were talking about the unsung heroes. So now you've come out of the trenches, to use that analogy again, and you've met all sorts of different groups. Has it been a real eye-opener in a sense?
It has in a way. And one of the eye-openers for me, as somebody who was fairly agnostic about the whole idea of the role, is the importance that people put on it and the pleasure that people get out of meeting the Lord Mayor, whoever that happens to be at the time, and it gives people a real thrill, and you don't want that to stop. You know, if people get a lot of pleasure out of that, then that's fine.
Yeah.
And as I always say, you go from you know, 1 minute you can be meeting the great and the good. I'm meeting an ambassador after this after this interview today. You can go from that, but then I'm going over to a Girl Guides event later this evening. So it's the variety that I suppose keeps it interesting. Mm.
What's it like meeting the ambassadors? That must be something different again from what you were used to.
Yes, it is. But the nice thing is that I've found that nearly everybody I've spoken to, without exception, I can't really think of any exception, have been really nice people. Mm. And the thing with ambassadors, of course, they're selling their country.
It's kind of their job, isn't it? Yeah.
And my job is to sell Cardiff to them and to say to them, because the ambassadors obviously don't dwell in Cardiff, most of them are in London.
Yeah.
Although some of them do have representatives in Cardiff, but the majority don't. And so my role, like their role, is about selling the city. And I think that the Lord Mayor is a very important part to play in making sure that people get a good perspective of what Cardiff has got to offer.
And in in 10 months you've been in the role, have you actually seen a tangible result of any of these meetings? You know, with ambassadors, as they're, you know, what you say, you're almost an ambassador yourself for the city. Have you seen a sort of genuine payoff to that?
Not directly, no, because I think these things...
But it takes time for a start.
As you're probably well aware, having worked in local government yourself, the machinery of the civil service works exceedingly slow. however, there have been a number of things that have been gradually taking place.
Yeah.
And I know that there's moves for one. I won't say who it is because not happened yet. But the, you know, one country where I met to the ambassador They are taking steps to bring an honorary consul to Cardiff,
right.
Which would be good.
Yeah,
so that'd be another
great.
Country with an honorary consul here.
Yeah.
And another occasion that has actually happened now, I wrote to the Royal Navy on behalf of Cardiff because we were conscious of the fact that there was no HMS Cardiff anymore.
That's right, yeah, it was decommissioned, wasn't it? Not that long ago,
that's
is that right?
That's right,
yeah.
And asked them if we could have another ship, and they've agreed.
Fantastic.
So that's happening. That was actually announced, unfortunately, while the snow was going on,
yeah.
So it rather missed the press. But
kind of lost it, yeah.
It lost in the press. But,
oh, you get another.
But another ship
that.
Is being
yeah.
built, which is going to be HMS Cardiff, and that should be commissioned around in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah. Are we getting a destroyer again? Or
frigate, I think
frigate,
it is.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. That's very good. And I'm quite interested in, you say, the sort of cachet and weight that the title of mayor has. And, you know, we've seen sort of more powerful mayors become, with actual power being appointed around
political
the UK,
mayors, yes.
political mayors. So it's quite interesting, isn't it, how they do have that certain sway, that certain power attached to the title. And do you get that feeling when you come to the Mansion House? I mean, there is a, for me anyway, you've been here a few times, there is a sort of weight of history when you come here.
I think there is, and I think it helps when people come here because it's got what it has, and I'd recommend any people from Cardiff who are listening to this, if they haven't been to the Mansion House, to try and come here and see the place. Which you know, as members of the public, we can,
yeah.
you know, you can
yeah,
hire.
How does that work then? How can people come here?
You can book it for events.
Ah, right. Yeah.
People can get married
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
You can have an afternoon tea here. You can have dinners here. All sorts of things. And I've tried to bring people in from time to time just to have a look around. Yes, but if people want to come and see, because it belongs to Cardiff, it belongs
yeah.
to the citizens.
Belongs
of Cardiff.
To the people.
It's
yeah.
our Mansion House. It's, you know, and although the Lord Mayor used to live here, that no longer happens, and it has to pay its way anyway. So, you know, that's what they have to try and do. But it's got that weight, hasn't it, behind
yeah.
it, the history here. And I think it's quite useful, that, because so when people do come, they think, oh, well, this is important, and therefore
yeah.
the Lord Mayor is important. There is sometimes a bit of, I think, misunderstanding of the Lord Mayor's
yeah.
power. And they perhaps because they've come from a country where they've got mayors who are elected mayors.
Yeah, that's the thing. Isn't
that's
it?
That can be
yeah.
wrong. But nevertheless, I've still, as a Lord Mayor, you still have influence.
Yeah.
Because obviously within your own party, you can go back and say to them, you can talk, you know, I have regular dialogue with the leader
yeah.
of the council. So although I don't have direct power, there's still an indirect link there
yeah.
that, you know, I can be putting forward things about what somebody suggested to me.
And will that continue then when you relinquish the role in May? Will, as an ex-Lord Mayor, if you like, will that sort of continue? Will you still have that sort of cachet?
You'd have to ask me that.
Next time you're on. Yeah, okay. No, I realise what a dumb question that was. Yeah, that's interesting. And so moving away from the mayor thing for a moment, I want to come back because your chosen charity is one I'm particularly interested in, so we'll have a chat about that in a while. Cardiff, how long roughly have you been involved in politics in Cardiff?
Well, I first joined the Labour Party in 1983
right.
after the 1983 election.
That was tempestuous times.
So, yeah, so I joined then and gradually became more active within
yeah.
my own local party. But because I'd got young children, didn't want to commit myself to being a councillor because I realised there was a big commitment to it. So I waited until they were teenagers
yeah.
before I put my name forward. And so I first got elected in 1999.
Right. And so obviously you've been in Cardiff a long time. So there's a common theme in these podcasts about how the city's changed. And it's pretty remarkable, I think, since you've been involved in politics and before that, the change has been unbelievable. So there's two elements to this. Well, how do you reflect on how the city has changed? And also, as a very, and I'm not butchering you up here, Bob, but you were very much, it seemed to me, a councillor that was very much about your people. You weren't a sort of professional politician, if you like. You were very much about the people on the ground. So I'm interested in how you reflect on the changes that Cardiff has had. It's, you know, for me, it's fantastic. But how much has it changed in your eyes, and how much has that percolated down to the people in your ward?
I think it's, well, like you say, well, we can all see it, can't we? It's changed dramatically in terms of what you can see. You know, when you think of, you know, Cardiff Bay, for instance, which was just, you know, basically a mud flats when, you know, back in the 80s, and even the city centre. And, I mean, most of the changes, I think, have been for the better, you know. And although it's always a difficult one, I think, to relate it to ordinary people in the street about how that's helped them, because you can't make a direct correlation between the two. And I think, and this is where it sometimes becomes difficult as a local politician to be able to say to people when I'm knocking on their door, or when people are on to me about, you know, the problem with their housing or the potholes in the street or the terrible state with the litter and all that sort of thing, to say to them, well, actually, things have improved.
Yeah.
If you look back to those particular periods, despite the fact, you know, and I'm not being political here, factual here, despite the fact the councils have a lot less money now per head of population than they had before to spend. So on that basis, it can be quite tricky. However, what we can point to is the fact that the number of jobs in Cardiff has grown exponentially, and therefore that's employment for the local people, as well as people obviously coming into Cardiff. And that, generally speaking, if you look at the council houses, a lot of improvements have gone on with the social housing and what's going on there. You know, people now have, you know, everybody has, they take it for granted now, don't they? Central heating, double glazing, all those sorts of things which have come in. So even people in social housing have got a lot better conditions than they used to have. And although, you know, people do get a bit fixated on the things that are wrong, my own view, looking back to when I first came, is that there's less wrong now than there was when I came.
Yeah.
And, you know, once I've finished doing this job, somebody gives me a few million pounds, I could rectify most of those things because they're not things that are not insurmountable.
Yeah. Have there been a new set of challenges, though? Is that part of it as well? Because I imagine priorities must have changed over the years. Yeah. As you say, everywhere's got central heating now. Mm. What are the next... These things must evolve all the time, I would have thought.
Well, of course, the one thing that happened when I became elected in 1999 was the formation at the same time of the Welsh Assembly.
Yeah.
And that's changed things, the dynamics... Mm. Tremendously, and of course that's evolved over the past 20 years as well, so that not only does local government have to do the sort of legal requirements of the UK national government in London now, but they also have to fulfil the requirements of a Welsh Assembly government. Prime example of that is in the area I was dealing with, which was the environment, the recycling targets that we have, you know, and Welsh government was putting on, you know, has been putting year on year targets for local councils to recycle more and more, and quite right in my view. But those are challenges, and of course we have to take the people with us to do it. You know, it's no good us saying okay and putting out a recycling bin for people to have if nobody uses it. We've got to convince people it's the right thing to do. So that's
a behaviour change, isn't it?
It is, that's a challenge. If you think to when you
think back,
we had one bin.
Yeah.
And you look
back
now,
all in the black bag.
That's
it?
Right. Yeah. Now look at what we've got. Mm. But people, if you treat them properly and give them the right information, the vast majority of people will sign up to these things because they think, yes, it's the right thing to do. And we've now got challenges around air pollution, which are getting worse and worse. We all accept that.
Yeah.
So there's the move is saying to people, look, we can't continue to use petrol, diesel cars and transport. You know, and Cardiff has to set an example of that with its own fleet, its buses.
Yeah.
You know, we have to show that actually these are the way forward is away from those fossil burning fuels and things like that actually pollute the atmosphere and move on. So, but I remember growing up back in giving my age away now, back in the 50s and 60s in Manchester, and it was nothing to come home from school in a pea super fog that you couldn't see your way home. Those have gone.
Yeah.
Very rarely get those now. So it's a different form of pollution that we're getting.
You think how filthy the River Taff used to be with all the stuff.
There were no fish there, were there?
No. I mean, it's incredibly clean now, isn't it? Yeah. So, I think all these things are uneven, aren't they? It's uneven progress.
So whatever you solve, there's always a new
challenge. It's generally up, though, isn't it? I think, I mean, that would be fair to say. So yeah, you mentioned you grew up in Manchester. So that's, how did you end up in Cardiff?
Well, that was luck.
Good or bad? Or what's the thought on that?
Now, the fact that I'm still here after 36 years, I think,
I think let's conclude good. Yeah.
And the fact that I'm Lord Mayor of the city. But oh, it's just a circumnavigated, I suppose. I joined the civil service, and as a lot of people who joined the civil service will probably know from their own experiences, you don't get a lot of choice when you join the civil service. You have to go to London to start. Yeah. And that's what I did. And I met my wife there, and we both agreed that we wanted to get out of London. And so I said, well, I want to go back to Manchester. But the opportunity came to come to Cardiff, and that was following, for those people old enough to remember, when Jim Callaghan was Prime Minister, he brought in a form of devolution, and he led the way by moving civil service departments out of London to other parts of the world, parts of the country. Yeah. And Cardiff was one of those, not surprisingly, given his constituency was Cardiff. And so I came in 1981 as part of that to Cardiff with the full intention of then moving to Manchester as soon as the opportunity permitted.
Right.
So either the opportunity's never come up, or or I've changed my mind in the meantime, and I think that's fairly obvious.
What was your impression then when you first came here in 81?
It was a nice small city. I was used to Manchester and London, very big
Manchester's
metropolises.
Huge, isn't it? Yeah.
So to come to somewhere like Cardiff, I remember one of the first times we came when we were looking for areas, before we looked at houses specifically, looking at areas to live in. And we suddenly realised we'd driven out of Cardiff and we were now into the Vale of Glamorgan.
Yeah.
Thought, oh, that.
Missed it. Yeah.
Missed it.
Oh, yeah. There it was. Yeah. It wouldn't have even had the M4. Oh, yeah, it would have had the M1. M4, sorry.
Yes, the M4.
Wouldn't it? But so your first impressions was, God almighty, this is a small place.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way, though.
No. And we quickly fell in love with Cardiff. There's no doubt about it. Within 5 or 6 years, I suppose, we'd pretty much decided that we wanted to stay.
Mm-hmm. Where's your wife from originally, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, calls herself from London, Kent originally.
Oh, from Kent, right, So it was actually a big sort of culture shock for the pair of you then, was it really?
Well, not so much for her, because her father, she always tells me she's part Welsh, her father came from Merthyr Tydfil.
Right.
So so she had been to Wales a lot, used to go to Pembroke for holidays every year. And used to visit her father, her grandfather in Merthyr Tydfil, who was still there. So she knew the area a bit, but she certainly didn't know Cardiff.
Hmm. And then, so you quickly decided then, as you say, 5 or 6 years, this is the place for us. And
well, we had a couple of children by then.
Yeah, so that ditched all thoughts of leaving, really, did it?
It did.
And so then, obviously, you got involved politically. And I want to go back to, I know you can't get political. How do you, or indeed, has there been a change in how politics is conducted now to what it was then? I think there's a public perception about this, isn't there?
Yes. I don't. Politics has always been, you know, I always say to people, if they ask me, my honest answer to them is always the same, that nearly all the politicians I've ever met go into politics for the right reasons, because they want to make a change
from whatever
for
side,
the better,
right?
From whatever political party they're in. They want to make a change for the better. They have a view about what that change should, how that change should happen and what should happen, and that's where the political differences come in. But that's what people go into politics for. I've hardly come across anybody who goes into politics to make money or to become all-powerful. There may be the odd one or two, but that's not what I perceive. And, all right, some people then go on to get involved. And I think for me, the interesting thing for me, I think, about the way politicians come along now is the big difference. Whereas when I was younger and I got involved in politics in the Labour Party, and I can only speak about the Labour Party in any depth, people came from all walks of life, got involved. So, you know, and a trade union had a very strong role to play. I was a very strong trade unionist. So that, in a way, led me into the Labour Party, although my union wasn't affiliated to the Labour Party. And that was very much the way people entered the Labour Party, if you like. Now, if you look now at how a lot of people go in, there's a lot of it who become almost full-time politicians before they actually take up a role. You know, they work for the Assembly. Mm. They work for somebody in the Assembly. You know, they work for an MP.
Yeah.
And a lot of people seem to be using that now as a way of moving forward. And I think, to me, I think we could lose something if we're not careful about that, because you want to make sure that you've got that diversity of choice so that people can come to politics from all sorts of different ways.
Yeah, because on the face of it, that doesn't sound great, does it? Because it's just literally, that's all they've ever known is working with and for politicians. So,
add to that, it reminds me a bit of, I remember chatting to my wife some years ago, and they were about teachers. And she was saying the trouble with a lot of teachers is they've only ever known school.
Mm.
They've gone from school, they've gone to university, they've gone into teacher training, they've become teachers, so they haven't got the experience of the wider world in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a good thing. Mm. And my worry about politics is similar to that,
yeah. I guess the counterbalance to that is, I think especially these days, is that teachers see the full delights of human society in their classrooms, don't they? I mean, I think the issues they're confronted with, they're borderline social workers now, aren't they?
They are. Oh,
but yes. I think you have to say about politicians as well, if you're working for an MP or the MP themselves, they're seeing casework, they're probably their insight into the issues that everyday people are facing. It's probably very, very good.
Oh, so in terms of them as being politicians, knowing how politics work is a big advantage, obviously, over somebody like myself who just came through the channels. The disadvantage is, of course, they don't always get the right perspective from the ordinary person's point of view. I mean, obviously, they grew up and they went to school and all the rest of it, so they, you know.
But sometimes you have to be in another job, don't you? Right. You have to actually experience doing something else.
If you've done that, I think you get a better perspective on life. Mm. And I know that from, my own life, in terms of when I look back now, some of the things I did or got involved with, I think to myself now, well, actually, had I had that experience then, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And of course, that's part of growing up, isn't it? We all do that. But I just worry a little bit about the politics from that perspective. I want to feel that if you look at the cabinet, today's cabinet, the Labour cabinet that went before it, from some years before, a lot of those people were involved with that were consummate politicians, but didn't necessarily have that perspective of some of the other people, like the John Prescott, who've been...
Yeah, like him or loathe him, he had plenty of experience
and
outside politics,
hadn't he? He could talk about things as somebody who'd been there and done it.
That's
as an ordinary person and knew the problems of that. And so I think so that's where I think politics has changed for me over the past 15 to 20 years. And I am a bit concerned that we don't allow to... there's a role for those people, but I think we also make sure that there's a wider role for other people as well to get involved. You don't want to put people off.
No. So why do you think less people who are, from other vocations are going into politics then? What's been the logjam there,
I think if you see the headlines in the papers, that probably gives a good idea of the answer to that. Politicians have had such a bad press.
Yeah.
And I go back to my earlier point, most people go into politics for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say people don't do things wrong and people make mistakes, but we do that in all walks of life.
Yeah.
But I think that's the problem. And I've had it on the doorstep. All politicians are the same.
Yeah.
We're all in it for the one. And that's not true.
No.
It's not true, but it's putting people off.
Yeah.
And I think it particularly puts people off who don't want that form of confrontation about being a politician and getting that sort of flak. I mean, there's a big drive, and has been for many years now, to get more women involved in politics. Well, a lot of women, there is a difference between men and women.
Yeah.
And a lot of women don't want that. They don't like that.
Mm.
And so why would you put yourself through it
unless
you really were driven?
Yeah.
Why would you put yourself through that when there's plenty of easier options out there?
Yeah.
And, and get just as much money doing it.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's really, really interesting point. And I don't know, does that then lead... God, we're gonna, I don't want to stray into Brexit and Trump. In fact,
don't.
We probably really should be. But it can
when
lead...
You switch a cam- when you switch,
switch
the mic
the
off.
Damn thing off
that,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that off. yeah, so bringing it back to the Lord Mayor, because I'm conscious now that we need to stop pretty soon. You chose the RSPB as your...
RSPB and
for,
Bug Life.
Oh, and Bug Life, right? Yeah. So, can, just for the just to sort of conclude this this podcast, tell us a bit about why you chose those charities.
Well, I've always been, I'd say always, mostly for certainly for the last 30, 40 years, passionate about the environment and worried about what's happening to the environment. And I was very conscious of the fact that over the past few years, Lord Mayor's have picked charities that have been very much centred on health directly, you know, cancer, heart, that sort of thing. And I wanted to do something that just said something about me as a person. You know, I've known people who've died of cancer, I've known people who've had heart disease, I've known people who've had Alzheimer's, but I wanted to give an opportunity somewhere else. And RSPB and Bug Life in particular, because they've both worked closely with the council over the past few years, and I thought it was an opportunity for me to say thank you to them, give them an opportunity to raise funds, raise their profile more importantly, like Bug Life, a lot of people won't have heard of.
No.
For those who don't know it, they're interested obviously in the insect population, the pollinators of the flowers and the food that we eat, very important, and trying to give that a higher profile. Yeah. So I think that was why I did it, and it's gone very well. You know, you don't expect to raise as much money as you would for something that tugs at the heartstrings, you know, about people dying directly, but indirectly, you know, the environment's just as important, if not more important, because if we mess this one world up of ours, we won't get a second chance.
No, I agree. I think it's those two charities are tremendous, so that's really good. Right, I know you've got to meet the Lithuanian ambassador, so that's a great way to conclude the podcast.
Yeah, practice my Lithuanian.
Yeah, get those key Lithuanian phrases sorted before you meet him. But no one leaves... That's not true, actually. Some people do leave the Cardiff podcast empty-handed, and that is completely my fault. But you're not going to. I'm going to present you my... book that I wrote last year, it took ages to write, but thought you'd like to have that, so please enjoy it.
This is what I wrote. Thank you very much.
This is what I wrote, so thank you so much for inviting me into Mansion House.
That's a
and
pleasure.
Doing the podcast. It's been great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
The Lord Mayor, Bob Derbyshire there. Hope you enjoyed that look behind the scenes of a historic Cardiff institution. Big thanks again to Bob for inviting me to the Mansion House, and big thanks also to Paula Speed for all her help in arranging the interview. Next up is Ashley Todd of the famous and very marvellous Spillers Records, which was great fun. And if the stars align, we will have a special podcast from the Animateen Animation Festival at Chapter Arts next week. And that was a pretty difficult sentence to say. But I'll keep you posted on all that. But for now, thanks for listening.